Hello and a warm welcome to the Sweet Spot, your go-to golf tipping show, brought to you by The Racing Post. It's Jack Reeve, it's Steve Palmer. Three tournaments to look back on, three tournaments to preview, a winning selection from Steve Palmer last week. Steve, we might be on overtime here, lots to get through.
Yeah. Three to look back on. I mean, two extremely annoying tournaments, one extremely satisfying tournament, but even the satisfying one added a few grey hairs to my head. I mean, that was, you know, ended up being a much more turbulent final round than it should have been, but we will discuss.
Well, shall we start with one of the frustrating tournaments over in Bahrain? Is that where should we start?
Yes, chronological order, okay. Jack, chronological order.
Dylan Fratelli was the winner. It was his first win in 6 years. And I was reading that he was considering retirement last year. So for any, you know, budding golfers out there that are thinking of giving it in, sacking it in, be more like Fratelli. Keep on going. Got over the line, Steve.
Yeah, he said he was considering other options. He must have lots of other irons in the fire. I mean, he's won three DP World Tour events now. He's won once on the PGA Tour. They're all very low-grade events. He's a 33-year-old to consider in low-grade tournaments. But yeah, I wasn't pleased for him. I find it very hard to warm to Dylan Fratelli. I don't know about you, but he's an arrogant man. He's an arrogant man considering he's not, you know, he's not one of the elites. He, you know, arrogance is, the dictionary definition of arrogance is being sort of you know, believing in yourself more than you. Well, you tell me what it is. I've got myself in a muddle there.
But you know, I mean, read up on the dictionary.
Well, no, I've just gone off. You know, one of my usual going off on ones without thinking about it. But yeah, someone like Cristiano Ronaldo often gets called arrogant, doesn't he? But I don't think he is arrogant because he's so brilliant at what he does. You know, he's just
justified arrogance.
Justified arrogance, and I just think Dylan Fratelli swaggers around. It's just his manner. I saw him. He was horrible to a cameraman once in South Africa. I was watching a tournament in South Africa. And he was really nasty to this cameraman. I've never liked him since then. And then I didn't like his behaviour on Saturday either when he was bullying a tournament referee. I don't know if you were watching the Bahrain Championship on Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. He got a free drop at the 18th hole, a crucial free drop at the 18th hole in round three, because he was claiming that there was a sprinkler head underneath this massive amount of thick rough. You couldn't see the sprinkler head because there's such a juicy, his ball was just in a terrible line, this juicy rough. And he's pretending that he's going to hit the, in my eyes, he was pretending that he was going to hit this sprinkler head, and he bullied the referee and he got a free drop in it. Yeah, that was crucial moments. Sorry to go off on one, but yeah, I'm just not pleased with Dylan Fratelli.
Well, I must say when I wrote down the line, first win in 6 years, bounce back in career, I wasn't expecting him to be called sort of a deluded, cheating, arrogant golfer.
yeah. No, sorry to get on the back foot, but there's certain players that make the rules work for themselves, isn't there?
Who was it? Who was it when we were in contention in Spain with Adrián Auz that got that free drop that was just ridiculous?
Rafa Cabrera Bello.
That's it.
Yeah. Rafa Cabrera Bello got a free drop. That was a horrible moment. Yeah, that's obviously not out of your system yet. I think Yannick Paul in the 2022 Mallorca Open, Yannick Paul pretended he was going to hit a shot left-handed to get a free drop in that event and ended up winning in that event. So, that was the most questionable free drop I've seen until Saturday. Yeah, I thought Dylan Fratelli was lucky there. But, it was just a frustrating event from start to finish. And an 150-1 winner. I don't think many people would have been on Dylan Fratelli. It's another reason to not get, the party poppers out for the victory. And Hugo Casald, I mean, he was teasing. That's when Hugo Casald, 225-1 chance. He was on the leaderboard all week. Ended up finishing 12th, one shot outside the top eight. I was on each way top eight. He's one shot shy. I mean, you're a very sensible character. Did you play the top 20 market on Hugo Casald?
No, I didn't. But I must admit, Steve, I think you often tune in, or at least following these kind of DP World Tour tournaments earlier than me in the day. And most mornings, I would start my day with a coffee and some form of sort of Hugo propaganda in my WhatsApp mentions from you. And it was a delightful kind of Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And when I didn't receive it on the Sunday, I must say that was the moment I was concerned.
Yeah. I was enjoying the Hugo ride, as you well know. I mean, it was a toss up between three Frenchmen, wasn't it? And Frédéric Lacroix and Julien Gélière were behind Hugo Casald for a long way, and then they went and finished in the top eight, and then Hugo Casald finished a shot shy. So, but yeah, c'est la vie. And Harrison Endicott, did you follow any Harrison Endicott?
I mean, Harrison Endicott. Everywhere I look, Harrison Endicott seems to be at the moment. I must say, I think it was the was it the Australian Open that we previewed? Was it just before Christmas? And you were kind of on him then. I hadn't really followed the career of Mr. Endicott until that point. And now everywhere I look, he's there.
Well, he was the reformed drinker, wasn't he, that we were talking about last week. And that last week he was getting interviewed and waxing lyrical about the Arabian coffee. He's a massive coffee connoisseur now. Now he doesn't drink. The coffee was working wonders early in the week. On Saturday morning, it was a very eventful Saturday morning. Me and Tommy Tiger went to the driving range. When we started hitting balls on the driving range, Harrison Endicott was tied for the lead. When we finished hitting balls on the driving range, Harrison Endicott was 8 shots behind.
Did you hit?
It's only about a 2-hour session, but it's so frustrating. Like, you know, every time I'd check the golf scores, I'd see the Harrison Endicott drop another one. And, you know, we were beating the big dog in frustration. Me and Tommy, like, it's another double bogey. Let the big dog eat. It's a good place to be when things like that are happening.
I was going
to
say, I must say, Steve, a 2-hour session on the driving range, that's quite punchy.
Yeah, well, you know, he's 4 years old. You know, he's got to get the reps in early. Yes, hands were bleeding by the end of the session. But I said, come on, mate. Yeah, if you want to be Tiger Woods.
Yeah, just imagine you sort of standing behind him like Tiger with it. Yeah, brilliant. Well, that was a frustrating tournament, and so was Pebble Beach. Probably more so, you know, of a Sunday evening, you want to sit back and relax with the PGA Tour on, and we'll get on to LIV Golf in a moment, which I know was a half decent replacement, a very good replacement if you were on Steve Palmer's selections. Now, Pebble Beach was cut short because of the weather. It was won by Wyndham Clark, shot a course record 60 on the Saturday. Was he beat Åberg by a shot or two in the end? But he was being chased. And I think Clark might feel slightly fortunate to get over the line in that one.
Well, he was 6 shots behind going into what we thought was the third round. And 6 shots behind two of the best players in the world. You know, Ludwig Åberg and Scotty Scheffler were tied for the lead there. But a third round 60 just changed everything. You know, Clark charged through the field and he ended round 3 1 shot ahead of Åberg. And how crucial that one shot was, because, you know, had Clark been tied with Åberg, then the PGA Tour would have had a much more difficult decision to make with regards to, you know, the rest of the event. You know, more play would have been required to identify a champion. I got a mate who backed Åberg pre-tournament at 28-1, and he was sending me all sorts of angry texts. You know, he called the PGA Tour gutless. They're gutless. But it's very hard for us to tell, you know, what's happening. Now, it looked like Sunday was a complete washout. There's no way you could have played on the Sunday, but the Monday forecast looked a bit more promising. But they called it before Monday. Didn't they? They didn't even have a look on Monday. They decided it was all over. Yeah, it seemed a hasty end to the tournament to give up on Sunday night. But that's because there was a clear third round leader. I think if it had been a tie, they would have delayed it. And but yeah, you're right. It's a shame for Åberg back, as it was a shame for the PGA Tour, because, you know, LIV Golf served up an absolute thriller on Sunday night. PGA Tour not playing. PGA Tour was a damp squib.
What you mentioned your friend there, Steve, who was as angry about Åberg. What do you do when you've got a friend who's angry over WhatsApp? Do you kind of go into their emotion, or do you try and calm them down, or just agree with them at every moment?
I think you just got to listen in. People just need you to listen to them. My wife has taught me all this. She's very good on psychoanalysis. People just want to vent, and you just got to listen to them. The problem I've always had in the past is trying to come up with solutions. That's in the family environment. I'm always trying to come up with solutions. A lot of the time there is no solution. All people want to do is just vent their spleen, and you just listen, sympathize, and that makes the situation better. Yeah, that's what I did with this fella.
Oh, that's very good. Yeah, very good. Hopefully he's a bit more sympathetic towards the PGA now after your listening session. Well, it was Wyndham Clark. I can feel you itching to speak about LIV Golf, Steve. Should we do that now?
Yeah, let's talk about that now. Yeah.
No, it was, of course, it was a big week for LIV pre-play. Rahm coming in, Hatton coming in. It felt like they'd finally made some additions that kind of turned the dial a little bit. And I think in terms of everything going in their way, they'll be so delighted. You obviously had the PGA Tour event being cut short. Rahm was up near the top of the leaderboard. Everything went their way. It was eventually won by your man, Joachim Niemann, 14-1 winner for Steve. Shot 59 in there. It was such a roller coaster, though, because, again, you know, if you just look at things and go, okay, he's won a four-hole playoff in the dark. That's dramatic enough. But it could have been so much more comfortable if it wasn't for that overnight two-shot penalty. I mean, you must have been thinking it's one of those weeks again.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's a fully deserved champion, was Joachim. Open with a 59. Yeah, this is not an easy golf course, El Camaleon. You can't set it up that easy. You know, it's tight tree-lined track. The 59 was amazing. He had it on a string.
And that's probably the worst he could have done in that. It was, you know, 57 watch was on for a bit, wasn't it?
Well, do you know the funny thing, Jack? He's going up the last, and he thinks it's a par 72. He thought he needed to birdie the last for a 59. And then some fella starts shouting in the crowd, "Go for the 58, Joachim! Go for the 58!" I don't know whether he talked like that, but I'm probably a Mexican.
That's it the sounds thing. Good, yeah.
Someone shouted, "Go for the 58," and he's like, "What's he on about?" And then he starts talking to his caddy and working it all out. He just wanted to stay in the zone and not work it all out. But he thought he needed a birdie of the last for 59. The fella starts shouting, and then he realizes it's par 71, and he just needs to make a par for the 59. And he played a sort of safer shot there and ended up quite short. And then well, 59. Let's cut to the chase. Saturday's conditions were more difficult. You know, that wind that we said was going to get out, it did get up. But Neiman did well. He managed to stay four shots ahead. Then I tune in on the Sunday for the final round. I assumed the leaderboard inputter had made an error. Yeah, I was pretty casual when I saw it. I was like, Live Golf's all a bit shambles, a bit of fun. And I see the minus 11 next to his name. I'm squinting, like, because my eyes are pretty bad these days. I'm squinting, thinking, is it my eyesight going wrong? Oh, no, the inputter's Adam Mayer there. And then then Wackham comes out for his first shot, and the commentator starts talking about the overnight two-shot penalty. And my knickers were cut to ribbons at that point. I just could not believe what I was hearing. You know, the golf betting game is a serious test of character, let's be honest. And, it's not for the faint-hearted. Yeah, and overnight two-shot penalties are probably the ultimate test, aren't they, Jack?
I mean, to be fair, I know you were frustrated at the time and during, and I can understand why, but looking back now, it was definitely a penalty, wasn't it? The drop was illegal.
He took two club lengths, didn't he, when he was taking relief from the cart path instead of one. So he's supposed to take just... if you watch it back, though, it looks like he still dropped within the one club's length. But because he put two club lengths down, he obviously looks dodgy and is dodgy. It is what it is, I suppose. But I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, but you know I was losing my mind on Sunday night thinking that Liv just wanted John Rahm to win the tournament. And I was just like... It's a conspiracy. John Rahm winning would have been the greatest result for the Liv Chiefs. And that gave him a much better chance. So if anyone doesn't know what happened, Neiman ended up with a two-shot lead going into the final round rather than a four-shot because the Chiefs had had a look at this drop he took on the Saturday. And it must have been so tough for Neiman to get over that one. It put a strain on his relationship with his caddy as well, because obviously it's a team effort on those things, isn't it? The caddy's supposed to be looking out for those sort of blunders. Slowly but surely he fell behind. Sergio García and John Rahm both got one shot ahead of Neiman. He's going up the 16th thinking, oh, blimmin', it's slipped away. His birdie on the 16th was just pure class, so courageous. That pulled him level. Rahm fell apart, which we'll discuss. And then he beat García in an epic playoff, as you say, in total darkness.
Because they said to him, didn't they, that you're more than welcome to come back on Monday to finish this. But they both agreed. Joaquin was like, he said, I felt like I had the ball on a string. I just couldn't do no wrong in that playoff.
Absolutely. And the crowd were all shouting, one more hole, one more hole. Yeah, and I was shouting that because I felt Neiman was in control of that playoff. And yeah, I wanted one more hole because he was out driving García. Distance wise, García was starting a lot of the second shots to the playoff hole a long way behind Neiman. And then García finally buckled. Even if Neiman had not made that part in the fourth playoff hole, I don't think García would have made his for par. So, great stuff. And, and John Rahm, obviously, the other big talking point there. Just have a slurp of.
No, before we get on to Rahm, I really enjoy watching Joaquin play, and he's clearly a very talented player. My only frustration was after, he was asked about what are the dreams now, and he said, I just want to win majors. Well, you knew that you weren't going to be able to play in majors when you went to Live. Like, you can't have everything. He's gone for the cash, and now he's acting disappointed that he can't play them. It's hardly just been sprung upon you.
Yeah, I felt for the reporter there because he came on and was expecting a euphoric Neiman, and he just slipped straight into the, well, I'm not in any of the majors. It was an astonishingly morose performance after that. He should have interviewed me instead. I was ecstatic. But Neiman is actually in. He doesn't seem to realise he's in the Open Championship.
Yeah.
Because he won the Australian Open, he automatically qualified for the Open. So he's in one of the four majors. He is one of the best players in the world, and it is a shame he's not in the other three.
Just on John Rahm, I mean, Liv would, as you say, would have probably been delighted to see him up near the top of the leaderboard. He did fall apart, but it's clear that Rahm is there with a competitive edge. He clearly cares, and that is good to see, because I'm not convinced that all of the players on Liv have the kind of bite and the tenacity that he does.
Yeah, but is John Rahm going to enjoy it? I don't think he's going to enjoy Liv golf, because I was reminded last week that he's got those rabbit ears that Colin Montgomery used to have. You know, he hears everything, and there's loads of distraction on the Liv circuit. You know, there's enough to distract the most focused of players. And you could see Rahm's face, like he's lining up crucial putts, and then there's some hip hops playing on a nearby. Yeah, the hip hops blaring.
It is putt. Really strange. Yeah,
it's bonkers, isn't it? And like for the new boys, and like Rahm's face, like he was trying to get order where disorder is encouraged. Like he was backing away a lot. He was talking to spectators, and he was trying to get order where disorder is encouraged. I mean, the Liv Golf motto is golf but louder, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Rahm's gonna have to adjust to that. He was a little bit unsettled in the environment quite a lot. He looked quite cheesed off at times, but then he saw the benefits of being a Liv player afterwards, because he was rubbish over that closing stretch, closed with back-to-back bogeys, but walks off the golf course feeling terrible, then realizes he's won the team event. Legion 13 had won the team event. He's just won another load of dough. That's the good thing about being Liv. You can play rubbish and still win loads of money.
Absolutely. Well done, Steve. Nice to get one over the line. Probably the most unlikely, considering in the last few weeks. But great to get that winner in Liv. Shall we move on to this week's tournament? Another triple header coming up.
Yeah.
Right, let's do it. Let's start with the Qatar Masters, shall we, at Doha Golf Club. Steve, run us through where we're at. What's the track like?
Yes, Doha Golf Club is a 7,475-yard par 72, four par fives. It's been the traditional home of the Qatar Masters. It staged the inaugural edition in 1998, then every year until 2020. We went to Education City Golf Club for 2 years, then Doha resumed hosting duties in 2022. The weather is crucial here, and it's an exposed track. It becomes much more testing in a breeze. We've got a mixed forecast this week. 2 days of moderate breeze before a calm weekend, sunny and warm throughout. So all-round ball striking class is the ticket to success. We've got a field of 1-3-2 going to post.
Okay, let's take a look at the top of the market. Rasmus Højgaard, your 10-1 favourite. Yannick Paul, 18-1, same price as Xander Lombard. Tom McKibben, 22s. Tristan the Piston Lawrence, 25-1. Kaita Nakajima, 25-1. Antoine Rosner, 28. Bigger the rest. Steve, how many selections for Qatar Masters?
Three.
Who's up first?
Frédéric Lacroix, 30-1. Freddie is going to turn this into Nightmare on Doha Street for the bookmakers. I was close to pulling the trigger on him last week. I was seduced by the much bigger odds about Hugo Casaud. I'm not making the same mistake again. Frédéric Lacroix playing some magnificent golf. Magnifique. I think he's ready to win a maiden DP World Tour title this week. Lacroix's form figures from his last 9 tournaments. So that's 5 Challenge Tour events, 4 DP World Tour events, 15-8-6-13-3-17-5-3-4. 9 top 20s, Jack, 6 top 10s, 4 top 5s, just not putting a foot wrong, hitting it long and straight, loving life in the Middle East. He's an ultra-consistent ball striker, as this fellow. He was 3rd in the Ras Al Khaimah, 4th in Bahrain last week. He's won 3 times on the Alps Tour in 2019. He's been a danger whenever he's teed up on the Challenge Tour in the last 3 years, and he now seems settled on the DP World Tour for me. This is a 28-year-old who's come of age. He was in dire form when he made his Doha debut in 2022. That was his only previous spin here. It was windy, and he opened with a 78. He carded a Friday 70, missed the cut. 2 years later, he's back here for the Doha return. Much more confident player. Yeah, I'm expecting the pride of Paris to triumph on Sunday.
Have you been watching Trigger Point on ITV, Steve?
No, what is that?
Well, it was sort of like this sort of police crime drama type thing. It's very good. And they were interviewing someone who's English, and he started chanting this kind of tribal thing in French. And it's incredibly intimidating. And you started sort of speaking your French lingo then, you can be very angry as a Frenchman, can't you?
You can. Je voudrais un poulet. Je voudrais un poulet.
Exactly that. Yeah. I don't know what that means. No, what does it mean?
You go and shout that, you'll really scare the staff. It means I would like a chicken. So that's the only French I know. But yeah, it's useful in certain situations.
Absolutely. Okay. Mr. Lacroix, top tip in the Qatar Masters, Steve Palmer. Two to go. Who's up next?
Tom McKibben, 25-1. Another player who's made a really solid start to the DP World Tour season. He was 25th in the Dubai Invitational, 14th in the Dubai Desert Classic, 16th in the Ras Al Khaimah Championship. He's been suffering with a cold putter, but his long game has been in superb condition, which will come as a great relief for him because he signed for Callaway over New Year. He put a new set of clubs in the bag. He's been hitting them great. When a few putts drop, he will surely win a second DP World Tour title. Yeah, this is a 21-year-old who's going places. He turned pro at the age of 18. Rory McIlroy thinks he's great. Patrick Harrington thinks he's great. I think he's great. He won the European Open in June last summer. And his second best result of last year was 9th place in the Qatar Masters, on his Qatar Masters debut. He finished only 5 shots off the lead. That windy forecast we mentioned over the first 36 holes this week, that's a positive for the Northern Irishman. And then he's got the firepower to make merry over the calm weekend. He skipped Bahrain last week to freshen up for this. He's a must for the staking plan.
Again, he's another one of those, Steve, that you just forget how young he is because it feels like he's been around. I know he's not been around for ages, but 21 years. There's some serious, serious talent on the various tours now. It is absolutely ridiculous.
And he believes in himself. No nonsense. I like those players that just turn pro straight away. Akshay Bhatti is another one in PJ. He said, forget it. I know I'm good enough. Boom. And McKibben's the same. You know, he's got the self-belief for good reason.
Tom McKibben, second pick in the Qatar Masters, third and final selection here, Steve.
Sean Crocker, 45-1, who possesses the long game class to handle those windy first 2 days. And he's also got the length to attack over the more scorable weekend. Crocker started this year brightly with 6th place in the Dubai Invitational. Then he missed the cut in the Dubai Desert Classic, but he admits he hates that course. He always does poorly at the Emirates. He made no impact in Ras Al Khaimah either, but 16th place last week in Bahrain was very encouraging. He opened and closed with a 68. He was bogey-free on Sunday. He's arrived in Qatar with confidence. I think he'll threaten a second DP World Tour title. On his Doha debut in 2018, Crocker was 420th in the world rankings, inexperienced maiden, but he opened with rounds of 67, 68 and 67. He was in 3rd place going into the final round, dropped away on the Sunday, understandable, but showed a early liking for the course. Then last year, he finished 9th. He's always been a good desert golfer. He was 5th in the 2018 Challenge Tour Grand Final in Ras Al Khaimah, 8th in the 2021 Dubai Championship, 12th in the 2021 Saudi International. This is a good fit for Crocker.
Mr. Crocker. No love for Højgaard this week? Who's a favourite?
Well, he's playing for a 5th consecutive week. You know, he might be running on empty. He was ill last week at the start of the Bahrain Championship. Mm. There was a bug going around over the weekend of the Ras Al Khaimah. Alex Fitzpatrick had it as well, unfortunately for us last week. So Fitzpatrick was ill last week. Rasmus was ill last week. Fifth event on the spin. Mm. Has he got enough juice in the tank?
Well, we shall find out, won't we? There we go. 3 selections for the Qatar Masters. We will recap all of Steve's selections at the end of the show. Let's move over to the PGA Tour. Is that's chronological, isn't it, Steve?
Yes. I love that.
Okay. Phoenix Open. Always an exciting tournament, this one, at TPC Scottsdale. Steve, we should know the track by now, but talk us through it anyway.
Yeah, the stadium course, TPC Scottsdale, Arizona, 7,261 yards, par 71, 3 par 5s. The course has been used for this event since 1987. It's most famous for its enormous galleries. More than 200,000 fans cram into the course on Friday and Saturday. We've got some pre-tournament rain softening the track. Cool, calm conditions expected throughout. Temperatures between 7°C and 17°C. Scottsdale traditionally conquered by players who churn out greens in regulation for 4 days. Greens in regulation is the key stat this week. And we usually get high-class champion, Jack. 7 of the last 8 Phoenix Open champions were inside the top 20 of the world rankings at the time of their victory. A field of 1-3-2 going to post here too.
Okay. Talk about high-class winners, a high-class field. 2-time winner, Scotty Scheffler, your favourite, 9-2. Justin Thomas, 10-1. Max Homer, 14s. Jordan Spieth, 16s. Sam Burn, 18, Sung Jae Im 25-1. Big are the rest. Steve, how many selections for the Phoenix Open?
Two.
Just the two. Okay, great stuff. Who's your main pick?
Scotty Scheffler, 9-2. An absolute gift as an each-way bet this week. I'll take the usual abuse from primitive punters who get angry when I suggest an each-way investment on a short-priced golfer, but the shrewdies out there will know what I'm on about. If you can fund the win part of this bet with the place element, then it's a wonderful wager. I'm clearly not the only one taking advantage of this opportunity. It's being backed. You could get 5-1 and a 50 odds 10 places on Monday afternoon. You know, my computer was drenched in drool, Jack. I'm still mopping up my computer. What an offer that was. When I assessed this tournament, I said to myself, it's all systems go on the chef if I can get 4-1. I got 5-1. There's bits and bobs of 5-1 still left. He's easy to back at 9-2. Anything 4-1 or bigger is worth backing each way. I just can't see Scheffler failing to contend. By far the most likely winner for me. We've mentioned the key to success in the Phoenix Open is greens in regulation. Scheffler's greens in regulation numbers, Jack, over the last two and a bit seasons, are out of this world, you know, otherworldly. You know, nobody apart from Tiger Woods in 2006 hit the ball better than Scheffler last season, you know, statistically. You know, it was Tiger in his pomp stuff. And Scheffler has been the most consistent ball striker on the PGA Tour for a long time now. He topped the greens and regulation statistics in the 2021-2022 season, 72.29%. Last season, topped that stat again, 74.43%. This season, only played three events. He's top again with a greens and regulation figure of 90.48%. He's played 126 measured holes on the PGA Tour, and he's hit 114 greens in regulation. He finished sixth at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am last week on his tournament debut. He'd never played Spyglass Hill before. This week, in contrast, he goes to a venue where his three-year form figures are 7-1-1. He's gunning for the Phoenix Open hat-trick, as you mentioned. He won last year's Phoenix Open when it was an elevated designated event featuring all the best players in the world. The Phoenix Open is no longer elevated and designated. This week's field gets thin so fast. It's a rubbish Phoenix Open. Yeah, the chef is the bet of the year so far for me. I'm very, very excited about this week. And don't forget, he's got this increased putting confidence now. Been working with Phil Kenyon. It's instilled some self-belief. Even before that, Scheffler has always been brilliant on these greens. He loves these. He loves the Phoenix greens. Look at his numbers on the Phoenix greens. They're great. And yeah, you know, look at the second favorite. Like there's a lot of love for the second favorite this week, Justin Thomas. You know, since Justin Thomas last won a golf tournament, Scheffler has won the Phoenix Open, the Players Championship, and the Hero World Challenge. He deserves to be a much shorter price than Justin Thomas.
I think the thing with Scotty, Steve, he's obviously went on that ridiculous run. What was it, 18 months ago or what have you? But recently, seems to have been overlooked by all of us to an extent. But his, you know, he might maybe not winning as regular as he once was, but he's still always in and around there. He's still got that quality, hasn't he?
Ultra consistent. And like, if you can get 10 each way places this week, you know, you've got to have a vivid imagination, I think, to think that he's going to finish outside the top 10 in this field. I mean, obviously, responsible gambling, et cetera, et cetera. Come on, anything can happen in this game and probably will. But I just can't see Scheffler finishing outside the top 10, Jack. And yeah, an each way bet, just essentially a free wager if you feel that way. Anything can happen, responsible gambling.
Steve Palmer's bet of the year, Scottie Scheffler in the Phoenix Open. Who's the second best bet of the year?
Yeah, the only one I'm remotely interested in backing is the 33-1 Wyndham Clark, who won last week without all the usual mental strain which comes with winning. You know, he won an elevated designated signature event without going through the ringer. You know, he's banked a $3.6 million check for one good round of golf, essentially. He's fresh for the Phoenix Open. And yeah, this is a home game for Wyndham Clark. He lives in Scottsdale, Jack. He's never teed up in his home city event with more confidence than he's carrying now. This is the first time he's played in the Phoenix Open as a major champion. This is the first time he's played in the Phoenix Open with some Ryder Cup points under his belt. He won 1.5 points on an American side that was thrashed. He was a PGA Tour maiden for his last Phoenix Open. You know, it's easy to forget his maiden tour win came in May last year in the Wells Fargo. Just a completely different animal for the Phoenix Open this time. And last year, Clark finished 10th in the Phoenix Open. He was 151st in the world at the time. Now he's returning 12 months later as world number six never been higher than he is now. Scheffler is the only player in this field who's ranked above him. Let's back the two best players in the field. You don't need anyone else. Scheffler, I feel, will probably win. If he doesn't, then Clark can take advantage. He's fully focused on the PGA Tour now. He talked to LIV Golf. He admitted he talked to LIV Golf. They made an offer. He's turned it down. He's fully committed on the PGA Tour, and I think he may be rewarded with back-to-back victories if Scheffler somehow underperformed.
Okay, strong argument for both, Steve. Great stuff. Let's move on to LIV Golf Las Vegas. That rolls off the tongue nicely at Las Vegas Country Club. Where are we? What can we expect?
Well, yes, it's LIV Las Vegas. LIV Las Vegas. LIV Las Vegas. Right, Las City, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher. That's the actual lyrics. The old Elvis.
I half expect, did you ever watch the Elvis film?
I have, yeah, I love him. Yeah.
It doesn't end. It just goes on and on. I made the terrible mistake, Steve, of watching that at quite a late viewing at the cinema. And you think it's about to end, and then it just goes on. And then you think, and it was the same with that. I wondered, is he ever stopping?
I could have gone on and on, because they are the actual lyrics. It's incredible. Elvis is definitely not going to get a job on a responsible gambling unit, because his actual lyrics are, I've got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher. I thought that was an incredible thing for Elvis to say. He's up for Las Vegas, and we're up for Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Leave a Las Vegas. Would you like some details?
Yeah, I would.
It starts at 6:15 p.m. This is the crucial one. 6:15 p.m. on Thursday. They're starting a day earlier.
They're starting PGA Tour of them.
Well, they're starting a day earlier because it's the Super Bowl on Sunday, Jack.
I've done my
research on this. The Super Bowl, I believe, is in Las Vegas, and it's the Chiefs against the 49ers. So it finishes on Saturday, then the Super Bowl Sunday. So yeah, usual rules. 54 players going to post, the same lineup as last week. 54 holes of action, no cut, and we're at Las Vegas Country Club. 7,089 yards, par 70, only two par fives. Las Vegas Country Club hosted at the Las Vegas Invitational on the PGA Tour in the olden days. You don't even need to look. It's so, you know, we're talking 30 years ago. Don't look at the form. Extremely lush track for a desert location. It's got pristine tree-lined fairways. It's not your typical desert layout. Several water hazards. Cool, calm conditions for the event. Temperatures peaking at 11°C. Get your jumper on.
A chilly one. Right, let's have a look at the top of the market then. John Rahm, 15-4 favourite. Last week's winner, Joachim Niemann, around about 10s. Brooks Koepka, 12-1. Cam Smith, 14s. Hatton, the same price, as well as DJ. Big Bryson DeChambeau, 18s. Bigger the rest. LIV Golf, Las Vegas. Steve, how many selections?
Well, we only had one last week. We're going to have two this week. Not quite as easy, but we're still confident.
Who are we going with as your number one pick?
Tyrrell Hatton at 16-1. There's a bit of 16-1 out there, which I think is astonishing. He'll probably be reminded of home this week. You know, it's a chilly, tree-lined golf course. He may be reminded of Wentworth, where he won his 2020 BMW PGA. We know he doesn't mind playing in cool weather. He's won two Dunhill Links championships in Scotland. His last DP World Tour victory was in the desert in Abu Dhabi. And I think his first LIV Golf victory will be in the Nevada desert on Saturday. Hatton very well suited to this assignment. It's a test of tee to green precision. And he slowly but surely found his A game this year. He shot 62 in the century. He closed with rounds of 65, 67 and 66 on his Sony Open debut. He obviously had a lot of things on his mind during those events, Jack. If you remember rightly, we were sort of questioning some of his tantrums had gone up a level. Do you remember? We were speculating, was that because he's moving to LIV? A lot of things on his mind. His PGA Tour career come to an end? And that is what happened. He was losing his head in Hawaii, but then he's got the deal done with LIV. And he was all smiles on Sunday in Mexico. Yeah, he made a slow start in LIV Mayakoba, settling into the new tour, the different vibe, the music, the course. He'd only played Al Chameleon once before on the PGA Tour. But by Sunday, he was absolutely buzzing. He carded a 64 on Sunday for eighth place. He outscored everyone in the field in the final round. It was a decisive round in terms of the team event. He clinched victory for Legion 13. And now, you know, he heads to Vegas feeding, you know, literally $1 million, you know, it's $60 million.
It's remarkable, Steve, isn't it? Because, you know, I can't believe it. Did you say his last win on the DP World Tour was at Abu Dhabi?
Yeah. Seems
he
a long time.
He would have probably gone off in that. I think, was he about 14s for that tournament? Probably.
Yeah.
The fact he's going off bigger in this, a third of the size, it's
And he likes Las Vegas, Jack. He played in the CJ Cup. Do you remember when the CJ Cup moved to Las Vegas on the PJ Tour in 2020 and 2021? Hatton was third and 18th in those two events. This course suits him even better than those ones. Hatton has settled immediately on LIV Golf. And I think 16-1 is enormous.
Yeah, me too. Tyrrell Hatton in LIV Golf. One more pick for this tournament, Steve. Who are we going with?
Yes, sir. It's Taylor Gooch. 20-1 Taylor Gooch, who knocked the rust off his game last week. He tied for 15th place. He said he was rusty. 15th was a good effort. He got better every day. He's well suited to this test of accuracy that we're going to get at Las Vegas Country Club. He finished 5th in both of those PGA Tour events in Las Vegas. I mentioned the CJ Cups. 5th in 2020, 5th in 2021. He was the most prolific winner of LIV titles last season. He won 3 times, and he started this year with some extra inspiration, Jack. I know you like these ones, but his first son arrived on January 21. So he's not long become a father to a son. He already had a daughter. Now got a son, Carter Gooch. Carter Gooch.
That's a strong name, isn't it?
It is. Carter Gooch has entered the world. So, yeah, Taylor's nappied up to the eyeballs. I think he's going to be the main threat to Hatton this week.
I was going to say, it was a worrying lack of kind of off-course research this week in terms of, former world number ones or stuff going on in the life. So I'm glad that came in late. You kept me going throughout that.
I always like to satisfy you, Jack, sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. There we go. LIV Golf. No love for Rahm after going last week.
He's the same price again. He's 4-1. I mean, we mentioned he closed with back-to-back bogeys at 17 and 18. Yeah, we must mention how easy 17 is. I mean, he took an iron off the tee. It's a short par 4. He hooked an iron off the tee into oblivion, unplayable. Yeah, it was one of the most embarrassing shots John Rahm has ever hit. Yeah, you know, he's favourite for the golf tournament at that point, and he's hooked an iron into it. Yeah, it was such a poor shot. This week we've got a par 70 with only 2 par 5s. It doesn't seem like ideal terrain to bounce back. You've got to keep an eye on this LIV stuff, because John Rahm, obviously, when the majors come around, he's going to be market principal no matter what happens. And the defending champion at the Masters. And he showed a severe amount of mental weakness on the 17th and 18th holes. It is a proper golf tournament, Jack. Yeah, I don't know if you were tuning in, but there was a reasonably intense atmosphere for that closing stretch. Sergio García, he was up against Sergio García, one of his heroes growing up. And it looked like, it looked at one stage that Rahm's going to get the job done. And his performance over those closing two holes was astonishingly bad.
No, I did tune in. I know we were chatting off air. It just needs a TV deal, doesn't it? It just doesn't feel right watching like a live stream on something. If they stuck it on, I don't know, TNT or something, it would be probably well worth watching. But I think it's maybe a behavioural change. It's just odd watching golf online.
Yeah, well, TNT is a channel going places, isn't it? I mean, I wanted to tune into the closing stages of the cricket yesterday or the day before, I can't remember, and I couldn't because they don't have TNT. So if they've got enough money to buy India versus England cricket matches, then surely they can get a bit of LIV action as well, can't they?
I forgot to ask at the start of the show, were you going bunting mental at the weekend?
No, I was not going bunting mental at the weekend. I was pleased for Bunting because,
I thought you'd have a lot of love for Mr. Bunting.
Well, I thought he had a good chance against Luke Humphries in the first round, and that worked out well. But I didn't think he'd win outright. But I'm delighted for Bunting because he's such a good egg, isn't he?
So he's a nice guy, doesn't he?
Yeah, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. Yeah, I was actually I backed Michael Van Gerwen for the darts tournament after the first round, so he did actually deny me some funds there. But I don't hold it against him because I do love Stephen Bunting.
What have you got planned for this week? Because you've had back-to-back triple headers. You must be exhausted at this stage, aren't you? Are you sort of running on caffeine or something?
Yeah. I mean, I need to do some walking, Jack. I don't do enough walking. The toes are becoming a massive issue again. They're swelling up when I don't move. When I don't move, my toes swell up. So I'm aware that I need to get walking. The only walk I did last week was to the public house on Wednesday night. So I'm very determined to do more walking in the days to come. And then I'm obviously going to watch this Each Way Treble come in. I mean, we have to discuss it.
Just talk us through the Each Way Treble.
The Each Way Treble is Frederic Lacroix, Scotty Scheffler, Tyrrell Hatton. You can get 30-1, 9-2, and 14-1. If you get those prices, your treble pays 2,556-1. God save the king.
Very nice indeed. Right, let's run through all of your selections before we head off, Steve. We shall start in Qatar.
Frederic Lacroix, Tom McKibben, Sean Crocker.
Phoenix Open.
Scotty Scheffler, Wyndham Clark.
And in LIV Golf.
Tyrrell Hatton, Taylor Gooch. So only 7 tips across 3 tournaments. You could do multiples on all of them. I always go for the ultimate glory of, you know, a larger stake on just one. So Lacroix, Scheffler and Hatton for me. But if you want to be more sensible, like, you know, sensible punters would have backed Hugo Casal, top 20 finish last week. If you want to be sensible, you can have smaller stakes on all of the combinations there.
Really excited. Just the one tournament next week. So hopefully you get some walk in, get your rest and recovery up. Have you got any nice walking routes around you from your house?
Dorset is a wonderful county for walk shares. Probably, Dorset and Cornwall are probably the two best counties in the country for walks, I would say. Perhaps I'm a little bit biased. But the walking options are there. It's just I'm just very rarely out of this shed, Jack.
There we go. Steve Palmer, thank you very much. If you're backing Steve's tips, please remember to do so with money that you could afford to lose. We'll be back next week for another episode of The Sweet Spot.